الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. There's a sentence we find in many du'as and ziyarat in which we are told to say or make this du'a, saying Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahya Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa mamati mamata Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. That Allah, make my life the life of Muhammad and his family, and make my death the death of Muhammad and his family. So here, when we are told to make this dua, so obviously we are told to see the life of the Prophet and the Imams, and then we are encouraged and inspired to make their life our own life. In other words, that their view of life should be our view of life. Their approach to life should be our approach to life. Their practice of life should be our practice of life. So now when we look at the emphasis of this point, is to make our life like the life of Ahlul Bayt. So this leads us to the question of life itself. And while I'm here, this will be the subject: what is life? What is life itself? How do you view life? How do you understand life? Have we understood life or not? What's the use of understanding life? What do you get out of knowing what life is? So the first question is, what is our general view of life? What is your view of life? What do you think life is in a general way? Not in specifics. Not in, for example, what are the specific details of life? Not asking about the details, but in general view, what is this life that we have? Because many times what happens is that a person, anyone who does not have a general view of life or an outlook on life, if someone does not have this general idea of what life is, will lose himself in the specific details of life. A person who doesn't know what his life is or where he's heading, you will see that the specific details of life will eat him up and will destroy him. A person who doesn't have a general view of life will be drowned in the specific details of life. If he becomes happy, he will be drowned in his happiness. If he becomes sad, he will be drowned in his sadness. He doesn't know how to be happy, he doesn't know how to be sad. He doesn't know how to fear, he doesn't know how to be brave. Every small details of life, you see, without the proper understanding of life, will always hurt him and harm him. Why? Because he doesn't know what life is. And when you don't know what life is, and we don't have the view, the correct view of life, you end up hurting yourself because of the small details that are in life and that are a part of life. So what we are looking for is having a view of life. And we see the examples amongst people who were close and had ma'rifat. People who were close and had ma'rifat. You see that, for example, Salman Farsi. His view of life, what was his view of life? When you look at it, they asked him, so how come you're always in the same mood? Meaning that you're always just happy-go-lucky without any worries, without any hardships, and not any anxiety, anything like that in this, you know, I mean, how does that happen? He says, you know, la ubali kayfa asbahto. He says, I don't worry how I wake up, where I wake up, I don't care. You know, where I sleep, I don't care. Wherever I find a place, I'll just sleep there. Where I wake up there. And that's why I don't, you know, have any worries about life. You see, he has, there's a general view of life that he has that is making him live it this way. See, the view that he has. The problems that we have, and I'm just giving you these ideas beforehand so that when we go into detail, then you will understand this, what I'm speaking about. Maybe right now it's just, for example, statements I'm making. But these statements, inshallah, will help us, you know, later on, inshallah, and I'll explain them in detail as we go along with this subject. Right? Because this is one of the issues that we have, that people's problems in life is because they don't understand life. If they understood life, there wouldn't be a problem. Why don't they understand life? There are many reasons for it. First reason is kufr. First reason is kufr. They don't believe in Allah. They don't believe in this. And hence, they have no clue what life is. And they have a misguided view of life. And because of their misguided view of life, then everything in life is a problem for them. You see, they go through depressions. They go through hardships. They go through tensions. And, you know, then they get illnesses and diseases because of these tensions. And because of these things that they go through in life. And this is exactly what happens, you know. So first reason what happened is kufr. When a person doesn't believe in Allah, you see right away he doesn't have the right view of life. And hence, his life, no matter how, you know, you can say in the worldly sense successful he is, he is still, you see, hurt and harmed by every little thing in life. Every little thing in life. You will see he'll be harmed by it. Sometimes a person does not have the correct view of life or the understanding of life is because of his wishes and dreams. You know, he has so many wishes and so many dreams. That he wants to be this, he wants to be that, he wants to be this, and he makes these dreams for himself, and they're completely out of control. And when they're out of control, you see that because he doesn't reach those dreams, he will be frustrated, he will be depressed, he will have those illnesses, mental problems. Why? Because of the fact that he has these long dreams and plans for himself that will never work out. And that's why you see that his life is messed up because of that. Sometimes what happens is that we have unreal expectations. Right? What is life? This and that. And maybe those expectations are not unreal, but we don't know where to find them, where to look for them. Because of the lack of understanding of what life is, we search for them in the wrong place and hence become frustrated because we don't find it here. Right? For example, if you think that there is gold under this land and you are told and you believe that, then you start digging for gold, you'll go so down and you'll go all the way down until you don't find it. What happens? You get frustrated. It was never there in the first place. It was never there in the first place. So what happened is that a lot of us look for things in life that are not there because we don't know what life is. And hence we become frustrated and become sick. There's riwayat we have that says that when a mu'min makes dua to Allah and is asking for specific things and he's going into the specific problems of his life, and he's worried about those specific things that Allah, you know, this loan over here or this thing over here, and I need that over there. I need this car with this color and this engine and that thing, you know. He goes into specifics and he's worried about those specifics. The angels look at this dua and they laugh at him. Right? They laugh at him. They say, what's wrong with you? I mean, you know, you should be better than that. You know what? You don't have an idea what life is? You know, they laugh at them. This is why, because of the correct understanding of life, these duas are being made. These ideas are in their head because they don't have the correct understanding of life. So what is life? What is the view of life that you have? For example, Prophet Nuh, when he was asked, what is life? His view of life. What is life? And you know that Nuh lived for 950 years. Right? 950 years he lived. And he was asked, what do you think of life? What is your view of life? And in his view, he replied back and said, life is like passing through a door. This is life. You see? 950 years for him was like passing through a door. That's all it was. You see, this is the view of life. So now the question comes, what is our view of life? What do you think about life itself? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Most people, they do not even start thinking about life. They haven't even given it much thought. Idea, what is life? You know, and they make a joke. Life is a, you know, yeah, that's it. Right? Just make a joke, you know. Have you actually sat down and thought about life itself? What is life? You know, most people don't do that. And you will see that whenever a person, anyone, starts to think about life, that's when he starts becoming a philosopher. You see, that's when he starts becoming a philosopher. You know, he starts thinking, why this? The minute he starts thinking about life, you see that he starts to philosophize, think, look into it. You see, this is what happens. This is what life does to you. Just thinking of life, it makes you a philosopher. Everyone is a philosopher when they start thinking of life. When they don't start thinking about life, then it is just, you know, something that they don't even know what's happening, and you know, it's just a dream and an illusion that's going to pass by. That's it. This is what life is for them, right? So the first step, my friends, is to reach the correct view of life. If you don't have the correct view of life, the correct definition of life, then really, we do not know how to live this life. We will always be in trouble. We will always make the wrong decisions. We will always do the wrong things. We will always be frustrated. We will always be depressed. We will always be unhappy. This is the first step. What is the correct view of life? When you teach your children Islam, there is a proper method for it. We have that, a proper method of how you teach Islam to kids. That's why you see that these Sunday schools are failing. Sunday schools fail because we don't have the correct, proper method of teaching Islam, the way that it has been taught to us by Ahlul Bayt. How did they teach Islam? What is first, what is second, what is later? Right? What do you teach at the beginning? What do you teach at the end? This is where you see that in the first stage, right? What do you teach first? They say, well, we need to teach about Tawheed. Ahlul Bayt never did that. Ahlul Bayt never taught about Tawheed first to their children. Nor about Nabuwat, nor about Akhirat, or any of these issues. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in a letter that he wrote to his children, in Nahjul Balagha, letter number 31 is a letter that he wrote to his children. And in it was like a comprehensive teaching, comprehensive education, right? Everything, what is first, what is second, this and that. And this letter that he wrote really should be a letter that should be highlighted in our own life. Most people, for example, when they speak about the letters of Imam Ali, they right away think about Malik Ashtar. He says, why are you reading the letter about Malik Yashter for? That is for a specific group of people who are in charge, who are ruling, who are leaders. Imam Ali is advising Malik Yashter as he's sending out, to, as he is sending him to become the governor of Egypt. So as a governor, what should you do? As a leader of the people, what should you do? How you should behave? You see, it's a specific letter. It's not applicable to everyone. It's not applicable to everyone. Right? Yes, the ideals are great and we should learn them. That's different. But it's a letter that's meant for specific people and that's it. It's not meant for everyone. Or for example, his sermon of Hammam, Khutbatul Hammam, when you see that, that is meant for those who are muttaqi. You know, he's a, what are the qualities of muttaqi people? You know, those who are, you know, religious, this and that, how you should be, what is those, you know, standards and those morals that you need to follow and this and that. Or average people, you know, they're like looking up and, Allah, what is that? We don't even understand that. So it's meant for specific amount of people. But you see that if there's one, you can say letter or speech or writing of Imam Ali in Nahj al-Balagha that is meant for everyone, it is this letter that he wrote to his children. This is meant for everyone to read. It is applicable for everyone to read. What is it? And when you read that letter, when you see that letter, you see that the first one-third of the letter, the first one-third of the letter is neither about Tawheed, neither about Nabuwat, neither about any of these issues. The first one-third of his lecture and his education for his children is just about what is life. What is life? What are the principles of life? What are the principles by which you lead your life? How you understand your life? It's just about life. You see, the emphasis first is on life first. Why? Because if you do not understand what life is, then you will see that you will not be able to take advantage of any other thing. Tawheed is useful when you know what life is. Nabuwat is useful when you know what life is. Akhirat is useful when you know what life is. If you don't know what life is, then this is just a hobby for you. It's not real for you. This is a hobby for you. You know, Islam is a hobby for you. You know, for example, Islam is like, you know, Saturday nights. Right? That is what it's going to end up to be. Why? Because we don't understand life. That's why having the correct view of life is the first step. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In short, life, my friends, right now, just to make this statement, life is a vessel, and we are alive. Life is a vessel, we are alive in it. Life is happening. It's going on. If we don't know what this life is, then nothing else would be of consequence. It wouldn't make sense to us. If I tell you, be patient, where in patience is life? Where in life is patience? Where do I become patient? Which part? Where? How? I don't know what life is. So even if you know what patience is, you won't know. It won't make sense to you. It won't make sense to you. For example, what is success? People run after success because they don't know what life is. If you understood what life is, then you would know that you're already successful. You're already successful. What are you running after? It's because I don't know what life is. That's why I'm running after success. I want success. What is success? What is success? Understand what life... I mean, if you understood what life is, you're already successful. Yeah, really? What's that? You don't know what life is. If you know what life is, then you would know what success is. People run after these things. Even wajibat, the taklif that Allah gave us, these wajibat that Allah gave us, prayers, fasting, this and that, it would not make sense if you don't know what life is. It won't make sense. What is love? Yes, you know, it's just burden for you. It's just burden for you. It's hardship for you. Inshallah, there is some ajr behind it, you know, hopefully. You know? I just do it because I like fasting. I can lose weight. Helps my willpower. You know, determination. All of these good things come out of it. Why do I pray? It makes me feel good. Makes me feel good. That's why I pray. It wouldn't make sense because we don't know what life is. This is the reason why first thing that we need to understand, the first thing is what is life. So now, just to end it here, inshallah, you know, we will go into detail from next week onwards, right, about life itself and the definition of life and to, you know, understand what life is, the teachings of Ahlul Bayt, you know, to know what it is. This is, you know, what we want to achieve. Life should be defined. And I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just throwing it out there for you to think about it. Life should be defined. How should life be defined? You know, so I'm giving ideas how life should be defined. I'm not defining for you. I'm just giving ideas. How should it be defined? You know, when you want to define life, what should it be like? My friends, when you define life and when you understand life, how should life be to you? What should you think about life knowing this definition? So I'm not defining it for you again. I'm just giving ideas what the definition should be like. I think that first thing, really, the first thing that the definition of life should be like is that it should be defined in such a way for us that we appreciate it, that we are happy with it, that we are happy that Alhamdulillah, I'm alive. It should be defined in such a way. Right? Now, if life is defined to you in such a way that, man, this is a burden, why am I even alive? Why am I even alive, you know? Obviously, I mean, just imagine that. If you were raised in a Wahhabi household, what would you think of life? You know, I mean, imagine, I feel sad for those kids being raised in an environment like that. You know, look at their definition of life. How hard must it be for them that their life is so, you know, that the way that life is defined for them is so dry, is so unhappy, that everyone's like, there's no fun in it. There's no happiness here. I mean, what is life? So the first idea of the definition of life should be such that when you know, oh, this is life, wow, I'm so happy. Wow, this is great. It's great, mashallah. I mean, you know, that's the way it should be defined, right? The definition should be such that it makes us happy that we have it. Right? That's the way it should be defined. The first thing in a definition. The second thing that life really should be for us, I mean, the way it should be defined is the fact that life, when we hear about it, when we get to know it, then we should appreciate the one who gave it to us. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. We should be happy that he gave it to us. You know, for example, you know, I mean, when Eid comes around and you give gifts to your children, this and that, for example, your kid wanted a PS3 or an Xbox, right? And you get him a plastic sword, right? So now, obviously, when he opens his packet, this and that, he sees a plastic sword, you know. Now, obviously, he will say, thank you, but, you know, just see his reaction. Oh, thank you. You know, this and that. Now, if he gets the Xbox, he'll be like, Dad, thank you, I love you, this and that, and all these excitement is there in the air, he's hugging you and kissing you, this and that, you get the plastic toy, like, thanks, Dad. You know, it's the thought that counts. Right? That's the reaction, right? So, when we got this gift of life, how was our reaction? How was our reaction to it? Have we understood that this is an Xbox? Or have we understood that this is a plastic car, you know, that he's running with?
What have you understood? You see, life should be defined in such a way that it should be so good that it should naturally make us just jump up and down with excitement. And then thank the one who gave it to us. That's the way life should be defined, right? I mean, this is my friend. I'm just giving you ideas right now. What is definition and all that? Inshallah, we'll go to it. But this is what it is. Some people, you know, when they ask the question, whenever they have hardships, this and that small thing, they say, you know, why me? Why does it have to happen to me? They're actually asking, what is this life? I don't understand it. That's what they're asking, actually. It has nothing to do with me. It's this life that I'm living. What is the problem with this life? And why is this happening to me? What is life? Because they don't understand life, that's why they're asking this question. They don't understand life. Are you asking about yourself or your life? When you say, why me? Look into it. Are you asking about yourself or are you asking about life? You see, the question is about life, not about yourself. You'll see that. It's about your own life. And that's where it comes out to. Some people have a view of life that, you know, really they don't understand. And they think they do. Right? For example, you know, if the kids are playing too much and they're not doing their homework, or for example, anything, you know, that this guy is, you know, lazy or not doing things, they say, you know, when they get angry, what do they say? Look at their view of life. They say that, what, you think life is a game? You think life is a game? Islam says, actually it is. It is a game. Allah says that in the Quran. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهْوٌ وَلَعِبٌ. The life of this world is nothing but a game. It's just a game. Sport, enjoy it. Have a good time with it. That's what life is meant for. We don't understand it that way. Allah himself is saying, life is a game, it's a sport. Why are you so upset, you know, so serious? Take it easy, enjoy, have a good time. See how Allah is defining life. Allah is saying it's a game. And we're saying, oh, it's not a game. Right? It's not a game. It's a game. It's really a game. Oh, wow. Wow. When you look at the definition of life, Allah himself says it's a game. Hadith says it's a game. It's a game. It's a sport. It's entertainment. That's what life is. Do you think that Allah made your life dry and hard and hardship and this and that? No, He made your life fun and exciting and enjoyable. It's just that we haven't understood it. You know, it's like a game that when you don't know how to play it, you leave it. Right? You get tired of it. I don't know what to do with it. Right? Life is just like that for us. A lot of people, because they don't understand it, they just leave it. It's boring, you know. No, you don't understand it. It is exciting. Allah said it's exciting in Quran. It's love and love. It's excitement, it's entertainment. And we are here, you know, all stuck up. And friends, why? Because we don't have the correct understanding of life. When we have the correct understanding of life, then you see our view changes on things. Then you see our idea of things change. You know, our outlook on every situation in life changes. No one is saying life doesn't have, you know, these type of problems and this and that. No, these problems are part of life. They're in life. It is brilliant. It is exciting. It is fun. It is entertaining with all the problems that it has. Really, what more problems can you face? Really, look at Imam Hussein. Look at Karbala. How many problems can you face that will equal to that? If you went through something like that, what would you say about life? What is your view of life? What is your view of this? You know, Ibn Ziyad, he told, you know, Allah has done this to you. It's ugly. Life is bad for you all. Right? He said, life is bad for you all. And Zainab said, Ma ra'aytu illa jameela. I didn't see anything but a beautiful thing. Ibn Ziyad is looking at it, he's looking at this is ugly, this is horrible what happened to you. And I'm saying, no, No, it's beautiful. You don't even know what happened. You don't even understand what life is. If you understood life, you would know how beautiful it is. You see, do we have that view of life? Do we have that understanding? You see, and this is what we want to understand. What is this life? What is life? When we have the correct view, then you will see that everything, how we view things, change. How we look at things change. This is what it is, my friends. Now when you see hardships, when you see things, these things, like, you know, you look at it and you'll take pleasure from it. Right? It's like, for example, you're like, Subhanallah. Yes. One thing is that when hardship happens on others, and there's nothing wrong with crying. There's nothing wrong with mourning those who have faced zulm and were mazloom, or they were hurt and harmed. There's nothing wrong with crying for them. The crying is different than what the reality is. The crying that Ahlul Bayt cried. Right? Ahlul Bayt cried. Imam Sajjad cried. He cried a lot. Yes. But that doesn't mean what we think it means. You know? When you see where's Imam, he knows where Imam Hussein is. He knows where Imam Hussein is. You know? He's in a much better place. He knows that. He knows more than us where Imam Hussein is. Right? But at the same time, he is crying. So isn't this contradictory? No, it's not. It's not contradictory, my friend. It's one thing to know that this person has achieved a great success. But there's another thing that's called love. There's nothing that's called love. Yes? I know that he has achieved a great success and I'm happy for him. But the fact because I loved him, I'm crying because of the separation. See, that's different. This is a different thing when you cry. Friends, really, the loss of Imam Hussein is what is burdensome for us. You know, the loss of them. You see the hardships they went to and how they were killed, the gory style they were killed in, the bloody style they were killed in. Yes, on the outward it's shocking, it's painful that how can this be done? But the fact that such treasure was not recognized is what is hurtful for us. That such gems were not appreciated is what is hurtful for us. That these people did not understand who Imam Hussein is what is hurtful for us. You don't understand, Hussein? My friends, the mourning that we have, the azah that we have, you see, it's all, I mean, for Rasulullah, what he went through, for Imam Ali, what he went through. Do you think what Imam Ali went through is any less that he wasn't recognized? The same thing as Imam Hussein. We cry for him. Imam Hassan, he wasn't recognized. He was not appreciated. He was left alone. I told you before, why do we cry? Why do we cry? What is the this crying for? Is it just because of this excruciating circumstances Ahlul Bayt faced in Karbala that makes us cry? Is it, for example, the way that Ali Akbar was killed and, you know, the spear in his heart, and is this the image that makes us cry? Is this the reason? Is it the way that Ali Asghar was killed and the arrow hit his neck? Is that the image you look at when you cry? What is in your heart that says, why am I crying? If you say that, then okay, what if Ali Akbar was not killed that way? What if Ali Asghar was not killed that way and they gave him poison? What, would you be happy now? What if Imam Hussein was not killed that way? Oh no, but still they were thirsty. What if Yazid gave them water and then killed him? Now would you be happy? Now would that be enough for you? No, no, I mean, how can that be? You know, I mean, look at Imam Hussein, you know, like for example, he shouldn't be, you know, he should be in Medina. Okay, what if he was in Medina and they abandoned him and they left him alone, isolated him? Now would you be happy? He says, when will you be happy? He said, no, Imam Hussein should be given his right. What is that right? What is that right? My friends, you're crying because the right that was given to Ahlul Bayt in Ghadir was not given to them. That's what you're crying for. The only time you will not cry is when Imam Zaman comes back and takes charge. That's when you say, now it has been done. Do you understand that? My friends, this crying is for a different reason. It's not those images that is there. Yes, when you look at it, it really appeals to you. It really makes us come closer to them. How come that they were so unappreciated, that they were so disregarded, that they were so much put down, that they were butchered like this? Why is it that Ahlul Bayt had to go through this? After Karbala also, it did not stop. Really, Karbala? I mean, Ashura was the beginning. Really, Ashura was the beginning. It was after Ashura when you see that troubles really started. Really, they were started. But you know what? I just want to speak about Imam Sajjad. You know, because according to riwayat, tonight is also one of the night of his shahadat. In fact, many places in the world tonight is commemorated as a shahadat, the night of the 12th. Just about Imam Sajjad. You know, Imam Sajjad was given a heavy responsibility by Imam Hussein. By Allah, really, he was given a very big responsibility. Imam Sajjad, what he had to go through, you know what he had to do? It is so hard, when you understand it in this light, it is so hard that Imam Sajjad, what he had to do and what he had to make sure happens. First of all, he had to make sure, this is Imam Sajjad I'm speaking about, he had to make sure that the izzat of Ahlul Bayt is maintained. The honor and respect of Ahlul Bayt is maintained. Because Imam Hussein, he had emphasized that. He said, Hayhat minna zilla. That we will never become zaleel. Now imagine Imam Zainul Abidin is now a prisoner of war. He's in chains. He can't do anything. And his women and children are also captives. And in that situation, he has to maintain the respect of Ahlul Bayt.
Ya Sajjad, Ya Sajjad, Ya Sajjad.
There was a place before Karbala that Imam Hussein gave a speech to his family. He brought his women and children together. This was before Karbala. They even arrived in Karbala. And he announced to them that, listen, there will be hardships that are coming. There will be problems that are coming. But then he advised them in this way. Listen to the words of Imam Hussein. He says, لا تشكو ولا تقولوا بألسنتكم ما ينقصوا قدركم. He says, do not complain. No matter what happens to you, do not complain. I know that you will be slapped, that you will be whipped, that there will be chains in your hand. But he said that do not complain to anyone. Maintain your respect. He says, and do not say anything from your tongues that will lower your respect and dignity in front of others. If your hands are hurt by those chains, don't say anything. Don't tell them, please loosen them to give them the satisfaction. Maintain your dignity, in other words. Maintain your dignity, in other words. That's why you see, Ahlul Bayt were trained by Imam Hussain, Imam Sajjad. When he saw the scenes that they had to go through, it was hard for him. But you know what? Even the little ones were trained. They knew what is right for them. Someone in Kufa, when the Ahlul Bayt were gathered in one place, in an intersection in Kufa, and they were put there like sheep for sale. Like you would have a herd of sheep there, and you would have them in one place to sell them. You know, Ahlul Bayt were kept like that, in an intersection in Kufa. And someone saw that, and they came, and they saw children there also. They came to Sakina. And you know what? Sakina is still thirsty. You know, she got a little bit of water, but you know what? She's thirsty and she is wanting water. She's wanting water. I mean, imagine a child who's thirsty. Just imagine your son or kid who's thirsty. And really thirsty. And he could use any type of whatever it comes from, he'll drink it. He cannot use his discretion to say, I don't want this, I don't want that. And he will not have that. He said, anything would do right now to quench my thirst. Sakina was thirsty. She was so thirsty that, and you know, she was like parched. Someone came to her and said, here, you know, here's some water for you. Here's some water for you. You know? And when, you know, she handed the water to her. But you know what? She didn't drink the water. She asked him, what is this that you're giving? Sadaqah. 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 You know what she said? She says, Ammati taqulu anna sadaqata alayna muharrama. He says, my aunt Zainab had said that sadaqah is haram on us. We cannot take it. We cannot take sadaqah. My friends, Imam Sajjad, he had to, first of all, maintain the izzat of Ahlul Bayt. At the same time, he had to make sure that the last light of imamat is not killed, that he himself is not killed. That he himself is not killed. And this was hard for Imam Sajjad. One side, he sees that these people are there and his hands are tied. His head is lowered. There's a neck brace on his neck that is cutting into his flesh. And all of this is not bothering. Even the thorns they threw on the way were not bothering Imam Sajjad. You know, when they threw the thorns on the way, it wasn't bothering Imam Sajjad. You know, every time he would spend on a thorn, it would pain. He also feels the pain when a thorn goes inside of him. And so many thorns went inside of him, he would be leaving tracks of blood and footprints in his blood. Imam Sajjad would go through that. That wasn't bothering him. What was bothering him were the women. You know, Imam Sajjad, he was looking down because you know what? He was trying in every way to keep the people's eyes from watching the lady. Every way. If he looked up, he would attract attention. He didn't want to attract attention. And there you see that he would hide himself. Not because he wouldn't face the situation, because he didn't want to attract more people to look at the ladies in the situation. What is going through Imam Sajjad? What is going through his heart? And then when they come to Kufa, they go inside of Kufa. And you know, there was one person who was there who met Imam Sajjad afterwards and said, Imam Sajjad, he came to him and said, you know, you are the Imam of the time, but I was disappointed in you. I was disappointed in you that I thought that you were brave, that you are from the children of Ali, and that you would stand up to these kuffar and these munafiqeen and these zalimeen. But, you know, when I saw you in the court of Ibn Ziyad, When I saw you, how you behaved in the court of Ibn Ziyad, I was disappointed in you. I mean, Muslim Ibn Aqil came and he was brave. His chest was out and he would dare Ibn Ziyad. And he talked to him like a lion. He talked to him like a lion. But when you came in, you were meek. Your head was bowed. Your chest was inside. And your shoulders were bowed down as if you had lost everything. What kind of an entry was that? I thought you would be brave like that. Imam Sajjad said, you have done injustice to me. You have done injustice to me. When Muslim came and my cousin came, you didn't notice that he was alone and he had no one with him. But when I came, I had my aunts and my sisters with me. How would I get up? How would I speak? How would I dare and not attract the attention of the people towards the ladies? You see what was keeping me down? Imam Sajjad went through this, but today, inshallah, let us just take, I'll say one more thing and you give your condolences to Imam Sajjad. You know, Imam Sajjad, When he left Karbala, the sight of his father and his people. Friends, you all have been through this. You all have been through this. And you know, death is a very hard circumstance on anyone in any family. When you take care of someone whose beloved had died, you know, you would, you know, want him to rest. Please, you rest. Let us do everything. Give us the ijazah. We will do everything for you. We will take care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything. Let us do everything. You would not say that, right? I mean, why? Because you know what he's going through. You know the hardship that he's going through. Especially if the person who was killed, who died a brutal death. If he died a brutal death, you will be like extra careful. Why? Because his heart is on the edge of breaking up. He would say, we will take care of the coffin and dafan. You go ahead. Down, right? If you do something wrong, you see right away they get upset. They're sensitive at that moment. You have to take care of them in a nice way. Why? Because people are sensitive. Their beloved have died. And they are in this situation. My friends, when Imam Sajjad was taken from Karbala, when he saw the body of Hussein, when he saw the body of his father, his brothers, his uncles, and everyone lying there. And you know what? They buried the soldiers on Yazid's side. They gave them a grave. They put them in the grave. And they left Imam Hussein and they left the family of Imam Hussein on the ground of Karbala without burying them. Without burying them. There, Imam Sajjad, when he saw that, someone do something to put a grave on them. Someone put something on my father's body. Put something there. Have some shame. The birds in the sky are ashamed that their imam is left like this. The sky is crying. Someone hide the shame of Ahlul Bayt. When Imam Sajjad left Karbala, it was hard for him. It was very hard for him. And you know, after the army left and they were gone, then Bani Asad, for whom Imam Hussein advised them, that when you see our bodies here, bury them. They came out to bury them. They came out to bury them. And when they were looking around, how would we bury these bodies? They didn't know. Why? Because there were no heads attached to their bodies. There were no heads that were attached to the bodies. They didn't know how to bury them. They said, what should we do? Should we make one grave for them? Should we make, you know, put all of them together? We don't know what to do. They were looking around thinking, what should we do to bury them? And then they saw someone coming towards their way. Someone came amongst their midst and said, let me tell you what to do. Let me tell you what to do. And you can see the sign. They said, we can see the signs of sadness on his face. He said, let me tell you what to do. He said, listen, you bury these people in one grave. Put them together. And they started putting the graves and the bodies inside. Every body that was going inside, Imam Sajjad was saying, be careful. Be careful. Don't be harsh on them. Because when they were alive, no one was caring for them. No one was compassionate. One grave was made. And then he said that, listen, this is the son of Hussein Akbar. And this is the body of his younger son, Asghar. Put them here, next to the feet of their... They put the grave to the bodies of this person here at this place. And they placed it there. And then they placed Imam Hussein. And they saw him cry so much on the body of Imam Hussein. They said, this is one thing. They put him there. And they're wondering, who is this young man? Who is this young man? Who is this young man? And then they said, okay, is this finished now? He says, no, there's one more that's left. You haven't noticed that. He said, where is that? We have to go by the river. We have to go by the river. That's where his body is lying down. They were like, were you here in the battle that you would know all this? How do you know that? You know, they were following behind him. They're following behind him. When they came to this body that Imam Sajjad, he just fell on the body and started crying over the body. And when they made the grave for the body, you know what happened? Imam Sajjad, why he was crying so much? Because Imam Sajjad, every time he would talk to his uncle Abbas, he would look up to him because Abbas was very tall. Now that he saw his body, his body was cut into pieces. The only thing that remained was the middle of his body. He said, oh, my uncle, what have they done to you? What have they done to you? Imam Sajjad, Ammu Abbas, you used to worry about Zainab, you used to worry about Umm Kulsum. Let me tell you what happened to them after you. Oh, their hands are tied in chains. They have been dragged through the streets. People threw stones at them. Oh, my uncle Abbas, where are you? Where are you? سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us a tawfiq, be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand His guidance. Oh Allah, we ask You, strengthen our hearts in the love of Ahlul Bayt. Oh Allah, we ask You, make our feet firm on the path of Ahlul Bayt. Oh Allah, we ask You to strengthen our arms to hold up the flag of Ahlul Bayt. O Allah, we ask You that our children who are here, we ask You to increase the love of Ahlul Bayt in their hearts. O Allah, we ask You that all the hardships that the mu'mineen are going through, that You help them to go through these hardships with sabr and with guidance. O Allah, we ask You that all the hardships that the mu'mineen are facing throughout the world, we ask You to give them relief. And we ask You that all the hypocrites and the enemies of Islam who are plotting against Islam, we ask You to destroy them. Oh Allah, we ask You to hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Allah, we ask You to make us His helper when He comes. واخر الدعوانا ان الحمد لله رب العالمين ماتم حسين